Merry fucking Christmas, guys. You made it to Christmas 2023. How crazy is that? Give yourself a pat in the back. And welcome to Los Angeles Film Club Christmas Bonus Edition. It's just myself. I thought we both needed a one-on-one. I need closure from you, and you probably need closure from me. I'm going to talk about and round up some films that I've watched this year. Some of the films are not precisely released this year, just films that I've watched this year, but that have stayed with me. And I've watched a bunch of films, but I'm just going to talk about the ones that I think are very noteworthy and the ones that are just like stayed with me and are worth talking about. And of course, I'm going to talk about Christmas films because it's been a fucked up year. And we all need to have a little pick-me-up. And I feel like Christmas films, no matter how cheesy they get, they somehow make you smile. I'm gonna get right to it, guys. So one of the films that I've watched this year that I loved so much that if DVD still existed, I would definitely get this film in Blu-ray because I love it so much. I watched it earlier this year, I would say February, January, of this year, although the film was released last year around December. The film is a historical drama. The title is Corsage. It's an 18th century period piece. What is there not to love about a period piece? But you have costumes, you have cinematography, you have dialogue, you have romance. For me, that's what makes the best of films. Corsage was based on Empress Elizabeth of Austria. Basically, this woman is about to turn 40 years old, and she is told by all of her peers that she is no longer beautiful. That once she was an empress, gorgeous, with porcelain skin, but now she has aging skin, and nobody wants to paint her, because I guess in 18th century, they would paint these empresses with their elaborate gowns and dresses and frame these beautiful paintings up in their castles. But no. Empress Elizabeth of Austria is told that she's too old to be drawn. So what happens is that her character starts to rebel against all of that. She starts to cut her hair, and interestingly enough, she gets into heroin around like the mid-half towards the end of the film. And it's just her rebelling, and it's just her rebelling against everything that she's being told. That's a great film to me. The costume designer, Monica Budinger. The corsets, the puff sleeves, the high collars. I mean, everything was just there for me. So if you're into period pieces with a really great storyline, Corsage with Vicky Krieps, it's such a great film. Especially now around this weather, like just snuggle up and watch a beautiful period piece. Another film that stayed with me and that I loved, it's an A24 film, also released last year. Also around the same period, or I think around December. And I ended up watching it also earlier this year, February, January or so. It's called Close. Close is a very tender story about two 13-year-old boys who are the best of friends, and they have an unbreakable bond. And they do everything together, ride bikes. The way their friendship is pictured in this film is just so beautiful because it's so innocent, and it takes me back to like a sentiment so simple as friendship. And the beauties that there is within the friendship. And a friendship that is when you're 13 years old. You know, you don't have outside influences. It's just you and your imagination with your friend. And this film really portrays that. But then the film takes a dark turn. And I'm not going to give it away. But they end up going to high school together. Not high school, I think it's junior high. And everybody around them starts to typecast these guys. Start bullying them, they call them the worst names. And one of the boys starts to take up sports and starts to say, look, no, I'm not gay. I'm super sporty, I'm a dude. And he starts to ignore his close friend. Yeah, and the rest is just so heart-wrenching. But this film never appoints, never makes it seem, never alludes that these two teenage boys have a romance together. It sort of hints to it at first because, you know, the viewer has their own thoughts, right? The viewer makes up their own scenarios, even without dialogue. So it's such a wonderful film. It leaves you with that thought also, like, wow, we really fuck things up, us as human beings. You know, something so beautiful and something so precious that is a friendship of two teenage boys, and then this outside notion ruins everything. So if you want to cry, and if you want to witness just a beautiful film overall, Close is a great film, you guys. And of course, the other film that I loved this year, I gotta put some horror in there, Talk to Me. Another A24 film. Talk to Me was released this year in the summer. Produced by Danny and Michael Filippo. These two brothers, I was able to listen to them on Joe Rogan. Joe Rogan had them on because Joe Rogan was also a fan of this film. Their high energy, their intensity, and the way they share these stories, what inspired the hand in the film Talk to Me. That was a great Joe Rogan episode. And if you're a fan of what goes behind the scenes of films and whatnot, that episode is great. And I do recommend that episode. But I also recommend this movie. If you have not seen Talk to Me is a great horror film, very original storyline. And it's also very current as well with all of the notions in there. Like there's social media situations in there, and it's really relevant with today's youth. They just hit the nail on the head with this one. Like the way it ended, it's a full circle moment type of film. And I love that. So if you love that too, and if you have not seen Talk to Me, what are you waiting for? It's a great film. Now I'm going to go and talk about shows that I love and that I have seen this year, that if you have not seen, definitely see them. They're really good and not a waste of time. The first one I'm going to mention is Beef with Stephen Young and Ali Wong, David Cho, Andrew Santino. But the acting in there was so good. Stephen Young, like I loved him on The Walking Dead, being Rick Grimes' sidekick for a minute, you know, until fucking Negan just had to ruin everything. And I think I stopped watching Walking Dead after Negan just fucked up Stephen Young that way. This is a great series, guys. If you are into road rage, and if you live in Los Angeles, you know what I'm talking about. So definitely check out Beef if you have not already. Because I'm pretty sure it's pretty popular and a lot of people have checked it out. But if you have been living under a rock, and you listen to this podcast, check out Beef. You won't regret it. Another series that I've been watching is Wolf Like Me. Wolf Like Me, it's a very funny, dark comedy. It's on Peacock, I believe. It's about a half hour per episode. And it's a funny story of this woman played by Isla Fisher, who becomes a werewolf at midnight on a full moon. And she's trying to be in a relationship. Some guy is seeking her out and trying to like hang out with her more, and she has this secret that she's a werewolf. So it has these really awkward moments, these scenarios, and it's really funny. And the film is actually centered around this Queens of the Stone Age song. And if there's a full moon with this song, she has to run home and go in her dungeon and lock herself because she turns into a werewolf. It's a cute, quirky story. And if you're into that, I'm sure you'll like this one. It's really good. So that's a great series. I have not finished it yet, but I'm almost there. Okay, so I'm gonna go off the cuffs here and talk about a docuseries that I've been into. I call reality shows docuseries because it makes me sound smarter. And it's on Netflix, and I just discovered it this year, but it was released in 2011. And it's only 2 seasons. I'm almost done with it. It's called Million Dollar Decorators. If you like all things decorating, and if you like aesthetics, if you like details, and if you like look at tips on how to decorate your place, this series is so good. So basically, these decorators, they decorate rooms and houses and apartments for the rich people in Los Angeles. It's so cool to see the dynamic of them going out and searching for these super crazy high-priced items, like $13,000 a chandelier. And these rich people are like, cool, cool, yeah, it's in the budget, it's in the budget. And I'm like, whoa, like it's just mind-blowing the way they ship money, you know, especially in this economy. I'm like, whoa, who the fuck spends $13,000 for a chandelier? Rich people. But there's this scene where like there's this interior decorator who is decorating this penthouse apartment for Sharon Osbourne, and everything's so meticulous. Like the paint has to be a certain color of green, and if it's not the perfect color, like he just like goes in this tirade, and it's just so crazy and it's so entertaining to see. One of my favorite interior decorators in there is Mary. Her name's Mary McDonald, I believe. She has like four pugs and they're all so adorable, but she has such good taste. And if I could just watch her like more than two seasons, oh my God, I would binge it forever. But if you're into aesthetics, if you're into decorating, and if you're into like, if you're just into cool stuff, definitely watch Million Dollar Decorators on Netflix. Those are, I think, some pretty notable stuff that I've mentioned. Okay, so now let's get to Christmas films. Okay, so I watched this film this year, although it was released in 1988. The title of this film is called Scrooged, with Bill Murray, director Richard Donner. If you have not seen Scrooged, guys, I mean, it's a typical story of Frank Cross, who is Bill Murray, is a wildly successful television executive who's super ambitious, super cold, and just an overall asshole. And he's just so hilarious in this film. This film is so fucking edgy for being in the 80s. From beginning to end, this film is so entertaining. And it's a typical story of him being visited by the three ghosts, you know, ghosts of Christmas past, present, and future. And the effects are also crazy and really good for being an 80s film. It's definitely worth watching. It's hilarious. It'll make you laugh for sure. And I just found out about this movie this year. How crazy is that, right? And now you know about it, so you could watch it. The dialogue is hilarious. There's so many puns in there. They're like just funny, and it's just overall such a classic. And I'm definitely adding this film to my Christmas list every year now. Another film that I've watched, and it's definitely a Christmas film. It's very heavy in the Christmas notion, but it's definitely noteworthy. It's Chevy Chase's National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. If you've been hearing about this film forever and you have not come across to just sitting down and watching it, Chevy Chase has like this aggressive Christmas spirit where everything has to be perfect on Christmas Day. He's the type of guy who, instead of going to the Christmas lot to buy a tree, he goes and takes his family out to the forest in the middle of the snow, and he gets this crazy huge pine tree and he ties it in the back of a station wagon and he drives home with it. And I think one of the most funniest parts in this film is his neighbors. His neighbor sees him drive in with this huge tree, and it's just like the funniest dialogue ever. I gotta show you.
It's like the toad overestimated the height of his living room ceiling.
Hey, Griswold, where do you think you're gonna put a tree that big? Bend over and I'll show you. You've got a lot of nerve talking to me like that, Griswold. I wasn't talking to you.
He said, "I wasn't talking to you," and his wife is standing right next to him. That makes it even funnier. But that's a great film. Definitely will get you in the Christmas spirit. And I definitely recommend it. Speaking about this film, though, also, Beverly D'Angelo portrays Chevy Chase's wife in this film. And she is such a babe. She's so beautiful. I think she's in her late 70s now, but she's still so gorgeous. She was married to Al Pacino for like ever. And she has kids with him as well. Also, Juliette Lewis is in this film, and she portrays Chevy Chase's daughter. And she must be like in her teens because she's so young looking here. I swear she's probably 13, 14 the most. But she's really great in this film as well. And I'm pretty sure this has to be one of her first films, if not probably her first film ever. Another Christmas film. A couple of weeks ago, I saw this film actually. It's produced by Francis Ford Coppola. It was released in 1993. It's called The Junkie's Christmas. So this is a short story by William S. Burroughs, who is an American novelist. And it's basically a 21-minute film. It's a black and white film. It's on YouTube. You can watch it in its entirety on YouTube. It's a claymation short animation film. And throughout the whole time, William S. Burroughs is narrating this film because it's his short story. And it's basically this junkie named Danny. You are taken into his journey of trying to score on Christmas Day. It takes place in New York City, and I believe the year within that film, it's around the 40s or so. So it takes you down this road of Danny trying to score his next hit of heroin. And throughout the whole film, you're just like going through this journey with him, and he finally scores. He goes to this old dingy hotel room, and he sets up his little spoon, and he's getting ready to inject his veins with this heroin, and he looks out the window a little paranoid, and then he's about to reward himself when he hears these groaning, moaning sounds across the hall. And he has to go see what it is. So he goes across the hall, he goes into this room to see a young man on a bed in pain. The film doesn't really specify what this young man is suffering from, but it alludes to a, like kidney stones type of pain. So then Danny is having to now decide whether he gives this young man his last hit of morphine or does he just keep it to himself. Danny, although he's a junkie, he does the unselfish thing on Christmas Day and he gives up his last hit of heroin and he injects it to the young man. And the young man is put at ease. He has no more pain. So then Danny goes back into his room and he falls into a deep sleep. And the film kind of makes it seem like he gets high as well, although you don't really see him inject anything since that was his last hit. And it doesn't give you like the explanation whether like he fell asleep because he was tired, he fell asleep because he's a junkie, and but it kind of makes it seem like he was also high. It's basically up to interpretation. So those films are the films that I love that kind of leave you with that question mark. It being a short story by William S. Burroughs, it kind of makes it seem like it was kind of a high that he got from being a good Samaritan and giving this young man his last hit of heroin. So that's what it alludes to, because it was a Christmas Day. But just the parallels of like, there's this family that's cozy by the fireplace and the Christmas tree. And then on the other side of the coin, there's this junkie on the streets wanting his next hit of heroin. You know, it's like Christmas is very tricky that way. It's not always gifts and presents and St. Nicholas. You know, there's actual a tough life, a rough life out there around this time of year as well. So this film makes you think that and makes you stay in that feeling for a while. And that is what I love about film, that it just connects with you that way and makes you feel. But yeah, The Junkie's Christmas. It's on YouTube. And the other Christmas films that I just gravitate towards, and they're not specifically Christmas films, but a lot of Tim Burton films make me feel warm and cozy inside because of all the elements that are in there, whether it be the snow globes that he has, like on Batman Returns, Edward Scissorhands, and of course Nightmare Before Christmas, an instant classic. All those films, they have like this dark type of holiday vibe. I tend to always have a dark aesthetic when it comes to Christmas. My tree right now is like, it has all these red bows with red tinsel everywhere, and the tree itself is flocked white, and my presents are black with red bows. It's very Tim Burton-esque, and Tim Burton films just remind me of Christmas. I am pretty sure not just for myself, but all the other goth kids out there. So, Merry Gothmas, guys. Is Die Hard a Christmas movie? There's been so much discussion if Die Hard is a Christmas movie. A lot of people say it's not a Christmas film. It's a fucking thriller, right? But you know what? Bruce Willis isn't doing that great. I hear his dementia is just getting worse. And it must be just so sad to see your work just kind of diminish and to see your creativity and all that you've created just kind of go away. So I'm going to give it to Bruce Willis and I'm going to stamp that movie, Die Hard, as a Christmas film. Why not? Get well soon, Bruce Willis. Another Christmas film that I love, and it is categorized under Christmas holiday film is Best Friends. That film is so hilarious. I mean, Anna Faris portrays this cracked out version of Britney Spears, and she makes no fucking sense throughout the whole movie. And she's like this super crazy ditzy blonde, and it's so hilarious to watch. Ryan Reynolds also, he plays this nerd that has a crush on this girl forever. And he has like this fat suit, braces, and this crazy afro. And it's just so funny to watch. Anna Faris has like this song where like she sings and she's an artist and she wants to be taken serious. And I gotta actually show you the song because it's so funny and it for sure puts me in a happy mood, this song.
To forgive is divine, so let's have a glass of wine and have makeup sex until the end of time, 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 time,
time. I mean, how can you not laugh? So if you have not watched Best Friends with Anna Faris and Ryan Reynolds, what are you waiting for? Everyone in your family will love this film. You'll have everybody laughing, family friendly as well. You're welcome. But yeah, that actually basically rounds up the Christmas films that I love. And hopefully you guys will enjoy those films as well. And now I'm going to talk about just briefly on what I'm looking forward to next year. Because like I'm saying, like this writer's strike is over now and this plethora of films is just coming out. But I have my favorites here that I'm looking into, and I'm definitely going to go out to the movie theater and buy myself a fucking ticket and go watch these films because I cannot wait. One of them is kind of very controversial, but I'm just going to buy my ticket anyway and go see it because The Crow with Bill Skarsgård, it's supposed to come out next year. There's so much controversy of this film because everybody's saying that it should be left alone. It shouldn't be fucked with. It's a classic. Brandon Lee was Eric Draven, and that's it. And I totally agree. I don't care for another version of The Crow. I think they did The Crow Part 2, I think it was City of Angels or something like that, and completely sucked. But Brandon Lee was not part of it. But I mean, if you have not heard about The Crow and all the controversy of this film, so basically Brandon Lee was shot on set and he died on set and he never finished the rest of The Crow. I've read that he, like towards the end of The Crow, it was a stand-in, right, that finished the movie, that he couldn't finish it. But just the fact that he died on set and they just finished the movie anyway, that is so cold. I mean, that's Hollywood for you, you know? Like, oh, he died, but we still have to finish this production. I was like, I would fucking shut down the set. I'd be like, no, rest in peace. Like, let's have some respect. But no, they just went forward with the production and they finished the film without him. And it's still a great movie. It's probably one of my most favorite romantic films ever. Eric Draven, portrayed by Brandon Lee, comes back from the dead to get vengeance on the killers that killed his girlfriend on Halloween night. Or his fiance, I think. And all throughout the film, it takes you to these beautiful moments of him remembering his time with his fiance and the way he was pushed out of the building and he fell to his death. And that haunts him throughout the film when he comes back from the dead. If you go to YouTube and you search for behind the scenes of The Crow, there's interviews of Brandon Lee where he like prolifically talks about Eric Draven and all the research he did and the way how he read about this character. And he's just so prolific and he really made Eric Draven who he was. And that just bleeds out onto the viewer. You know, if you see these interviews, you're like, wow, like he really took this so to heart. And that's why it's such a great film. And that's why it shouldn't be touched, you know? But I do think Bill Skarsgård is a decent actor. I am a fan of The Crow. Rest in peace, Brandon Lee. But that's one that I am looking forward to, but I'm not looking forward to, but I am, but I'm not, you know? It's one of those. Also Nosferatu, Robert Eggers' Nosferatu. And guess who's Nosferatu in that film, guys? Again, Bill Skarsgård. He's really tapping into his darkness. But the director, Robert Eggers, has this great resume. I mean, he directed The Lighthouse, The Northman, The Witch. So I think Nosferatu is going to have like that also, that notion, that black and white, that bleakness. So I think that's going to be a great film. And it comes out next year on Christmas Day. I think that's actually a perfect time of year to release a dark film that way on a Christmas Day. I think that's a great move. And I'm really excited to watch it. But let me just tell you the rest of the cast here. It's a fucking all-star cast. It's Bill Skarsgård, William Dafoe, Lily Rose Depp, Nicholas Hoult, Emma Corrin, Aaron Taylor Johnson, Nicole Kidman. So this movie is going to have a great impact, I think, in the movie theater. And I cannot wait to watch it. So Nosferatu, Christmas Day 2024. I'll be there. Also, I'm excited for Furiosa, a Mad Max saga. Also directed by George Miller, which he did all the other Mad Maxes. It's going to have that same notion. It's going to have that same vibe. But the only thing that I'm kind of skeptical is, I think it's a young Furiosa from judging the trailer. So Anya Taylor-Joy is the main character here. So I think it's like a younger Furiosa taking us into like her past and how she became who she is. But the cast is Anya Taylor-Joy, who plays Furiosa, Chris Hemsworth, Charlize Theron, Tom Hardy, Nicholas Hoult. So Charlize Theron will be in there. So I'm thinking maybe like a weird future conscious thought or something, or maybe we see her grow up into Charlize Theron. Who knows? But I think it's going to be somewhat of a franchise because it says saga, a Mad Max saga. So either they're going to build a franchise around Furiosa, or it's going to be just one film, which I'm excited for because Furiosa is just such a fucking badass, you know? Every time you see like a cool chick just kicking ass and looking amazing and just doing it better than the dudes, it's always a fucking treat, you know? Which is why I'm a big fan of Quentin Tarantino, because all of his females are like, fuck yeah, like that's who I wanted to be when I grew up. I wanted to be the bride. I wanted to be Jackie Brown. You know, that's why I love Quentin Tarantino, not because he's edgy and different. No, it's because the Quentin Tarantino female aesthetic, it's a fucking badass. You know, like she can fall, she can be buried, but she's gonna get out and she's gonna kick some ass. I'm also looking forward to Maxine, which I think that will be released earlier next year. Since the production started in the summer and it wrapped, I think, late summer, I'm pretty sure it's about to release next year, like early next year, probably even the spring, perhaps. If you guys have not seen X, the horror film, it's basically like the threequel, right? It's like a prequel, but it's the threequel. Maxine, it's directed by Ty West, and it's basically Mia Goth's journey of, I think this is going to be like the after, right? Like she makes it to Hollywood and she is this star that she always wanted to be. Because with Pearl, her character, like she just wants to be a star and she wants to be recognized, you know? So I think this follows that thought. So I cannot wait for that. And there's a trailer out there released, and it's on my Instagram. So if you guys have not followed Los Angeles Film Club, make sure you do, because I release some cool trailers there. And I release them first before everyone else. I have some connects. So make sure you guys follow. It's Los Angeles Film _ Club. Welcome to the club, guys. But yeah, a little bit more on the Maxine cast. So obviously it's Mia Goth. Which Mia Goth, like this year, she killed it with The Pearl, Maxine, Infinity Pool. Like her scream, her like horror face, it's so good. She's very much like the new Shelley Duvall. Shelley Duvall is the wife of Jack Nicholson in The Shining. She's very much Shelley Duvall. Like the new Shelley Duvall is Mia Goth. Horror expressions, her acting, like she's so good. And also like she's such a fashionista, like I love her fashion. And Mia Goth, if you're listening, if you're out there, and if you ever feel like doing charity work, come to this podcast. I would love to have a chat with you. I would love to offer you one of my famous martinis. Also Lily Collins is in there. Halsey is in there, the singer. Kevin Bacon's in there. Side note, do you ever get Kevin Bacon and Keith Urban mixed up? they're like the same people. Sometimes I'm like, Kevin Urban or Keith Bacon? Also another film I'm looking forward to, but this film actually is going to barely start production next year. So it probably won't be released till 2025 or 2024. But it's Cleopatra. Denis Villeneuve is actually directing this film. Denis Villeneuve has directed Dune, Dune 2, Blade Runner, Arrival. I mean, all the really good films he directed. So Cleopatra is going to be a fucking great film. And guess who's going to play Cleopatra? Zendaya. Do you guys see her as Cleopatra, though? I don't know if I do. Like, I think she's beautiful. I think she's super fucking talented. I mean, Euphoria, she fucking killed it. But I don't know if I see her as Cleopatra. For me, like, Cleopatra, like Elizabeth Taylor's Cleopatra, like, she had so much presence. And I know Zendaya has presence, too. I'm not saying she doesn't, but I also heard rumors, like, I saw this on TikTok where, like, this girl was saying that she's, like, close to the production, but she was saying that originally Angelina Jolie wanted this role, but it went to Zendaya, and Angelina Jolie was, like, so mad that they were being ageist because she's older and whatnot, and she wants to leave Hollywood and whatever because she was denied that role and given to someone younger. But to be honest, though, like, I kind of see Angelina Jolie more as Cleopatra. I mean, can they just do the same thing they did with Irishman, where, like, they made him look a little bit younger? I mean, I think there's things you can do, right? I think Angelina Jolie has more presence. I don't know if you guys have ever seen the movie Beowulf. She was, like, this kind of, like, CGI character. It was just so beautiful. Beautifully done. And I think they could do the same thing with Cleopatra, but I don't know. I'd be interested to see, like, how Zendaya portrays these big shoes to fill of Cleopatra. But yeah, guys, that pretty much rounds up everything I have to say. And I want to thank you guys for subscribing. If you have not subscribed, you should definitely subscribe, because next year I have a lot of really cool guests planned. Really cool people that you will definitely find entertaining. So you don't want to miss it, so you definitely want to subscribe. And if you have not followed the Instagram, which is Los Angeles Film_Club, make sure you follow for cool content, trailers and whatnot. Hey, and if you have a thought, if you have a film that you guys want me to watch and review, definitely drop me a DM, or you can always email me as well. There's an email link on that Instagram page as well, so you can go ahead and do that. Thanks for just coming along to this ride with me, guys. I really appreciate it. I originally wanted to start a podcast because, other than loving film, I love to hear and listen to these stories and how film just impacts the everyday person. I'm pretty much that type of person who goes to a museum and I absorb the paintings, I absorb the art and whatnot, but I also have moments where I just watch other people absorb the art too. So, because I kind of like to get lost in thought, where I wonder what this painting means to this person, or if they're going through something and this art or this painting somehow sets them free. How does this painting influence this person in what area of their life? You know, so that's the same thing with film. I like to see how it impacts you. I like to see how you absorb it. But I've always been interested in that. I'm not saying I'm this creeper that's just looking at people in the museum. No, I'm very discreet, but I'm watching. Also, this film podcast, I basically got inspired by listening to Bret Easton Ellis. Bret Easton Ellis is an author. He wrote American Psycho. He wrote Glamorama, and he has a new book out called Shards. He has a podcast, and it's on Patreon, which I had to be a sucker and fucking sign up for it and pay the $6 a month. But the way he just expresses himself about film is just so inspiring. And I thought, like, I definitely need to capture that essence of him, because he's so cool the way he describes every scene. You know, it's like, I'm there. I'm working on that still. I'm hoping to reach higher ground here with this podcast next year. Hopefully you guys found this podcast resourceful in some way and it spoke to you in some way. And if it did, don't be shy and share it to your friends and let them know that there's a new kid in town called Los Angeles Film Club, and they can definitely be part of the club, as you can too. Yeah, guys, thanks so much for listening. I love you all. Have an amazing year. Have a great fucking new year. And I'll see you all next year. Thank you so much. I appreciate you guys listening. Mwah.